Point number 14 that the Prophet was supposed to have referred to as one of the signs was when the drinking of alcohol would become common. And this, of course, does not refer to what we may call the non-alcoholic beer, because some people mistakenly have thought, well, this non-alcoholic beer, this is drinking now. People are making this alcohol acceptable by calling it non-alcoholic. No, but in fact, it's still beer, you know, or maybe wine or whatever, but they're calling it non-alcoholic. So in fact, we should be clear on this, that any drink which is not of itself intoxicating, no matter how much you drink it, it is not considered to be of the intoxicating drinks which are prohibited. Because in the Prophet Muhammad's time, they had a form of drink which is called Nabeez, which is a fermented drink, but it was not alcoholic. There was a form which became alcoholic. He allowed them to drink that which was not alcoholic and to prohibited that which was alcoholic, meaning that which was intoxicating. Because if anything ferments, there is a portion of alcohol. That process of fermentation is the process of formation of alcohol. You may find, you know, with modern instruments, a percentage of alcohol in yogurt. Yogurt is on the market, you're eating it, because it has gone through a process. And you will find, you know, maybe 0.00001%. But that does not make it an intoxicating substance. Because no matter how much yogurt you eat, you're not going to get high. You're not going to get intoxicated. So therefore, the fact that they're, you know, due to the powerful instruments that we have today to detect what is chemically identified as alcohol, this does not automatically put the judgment on that thing as being alcohol or intoxicating. We have to be clear on that. Intoxicating drinks which are prohibited or substances are those substances which, if you take them in large amounts, they will intoxicate you. Though if you take them in small amounts, they may not. This is the general principle the Prophet ﷺ gave. Whatever will intoxicate you, make you drunk, make you high, whatever, this is prohibited. Whether it is in small amounts or large amounts. But any substance which may contain chemically some of the properties which are essential in the alcoholic or intoxicating substances, substance is not automatically considered intoxicating and thus prohibited, unless it may intoxicate you in large amounts. So what this is more referring to, you know, is a situation where we find ourselves taking different substances which are being included now into medicines, etc. You know, different like Valium, etc. Different substances which are in fact intoxicating substances. Those people may use the excuse that it is medicine to treat yourself. But the Prophet had stated that Allah has not created a cure in the things which He has prohibited. That we should not treat our sicknesses, but we should not treat ourselves with those things which are prohibited, with the intoxicating substance. It should not be a part of our method of treatment. There may come circumstances, of course, you know, of absolute necessity, where limb and life is threatened, where doctors may be obliged to use such substances, but not on the scale that it's being used today, where we just find medicines all over the place which are, you know, of intoxicating nature. And when you take it, you become intoxicated. and it is accessible to the mass of people. The 15th point was when the latter generations of Muslims would curse the early generations. Cursing them meaning not necessarily that they would say that they were disbelievers or, you know, call them sinners or whatever, which is what, for example, the Shiites, the main branch of the Shiites, say, for example, in Iran, etc., they cursed the early generations of Muslims. They cursed Abu Bakr, Omar, Uthman. They cursed them, the majority of the Sahaba, they cursed them. They consider them to be apostates. You know? This is one form. But another way that it may be is by us saying, for example, that what that early generation did with Islam, this was suitable for their time. But it's not suitable for our time. You know, we need a new Islam. This kind of attitude where Islam, which was understood and practiced by the early generations of Muslims, is not considered suitable for these modern times, for the 20th century. Because, so in doing that, what happens then is that certain practices become allowable. Like dealing in interest, for example. So people, you will see in Yusuf Ali's commentary, where he explained in the Surah Al-Baqarah, where he's talking about the prohibition of interest, where he said that he didn't believe that what the Prophet Muhammad was prohibiting was the modern banking institutions which are on the system today. So he was prohibiting only a certain form which is no longer, you know, present today in the various monetary transactions. So in doing so, he was making allowable, by his own personal opinion, he was making allowable something which was prohibited. And this is the argument used by most of the secular systems that rule the Muslim world today. When you listen to the arguments of the different rulers, why they don't want Islam to become the law of the land? Because it's not suitable. Not suitable to these times. This is the basic argument. And of course, you know, the leadership coming out of America is the one telling them, yes, of course, it's not suitable. It's not suitable to these times. And they're just echoing these thoughts. So by doing that, by looking at Islam as not being suitable to these times, they are in fact cursing that early generation. Because Prophet Muhammad has said that you want to be correctly guided, you should hold on to his sunnah. And the sunnah or the way of that early generation of Muslims, led by what is called the righteous caliph. And he also said that the best of generations is my generation. Then those who come after them, then those who come after them. Telling us that Islam as practiced by those early generations is the best way. It's the model for us. We should take from them a benefit. So when we say it's not the best way, in fact it's not relevant to us today, we are, in a sense, cursing that early generation. Then the Imam closed off the first part of the khutbah by quoting a verse from the Quran in which Allah said, "We should fear a trial which will not affect only the sinful amongst you. And know that Allah is severe in retribution. اتقوا فتنة لا تصيبن الذين ظلموا منكم خاصة." It's a warning to us that it's not enough that we do right to be safe from the punishment of Allah. That if we allow those who are sinful to carry on with their sin, then Allah will send a punishment on us which will not just hit those who are miserable. It would hit society as a whole and include everybody. So it is our duty. It's the duty of the Ummah to make itself right, beginning with debate and ending with the leadership. It is the duty of the Ummah to establish correct leadership and to establish Islam within its members. In the second part of the khutbah, the Imam then went on to mention part of that punishment which the Prophet ﷺ predicted will overtake the people wherein these 15 characteristics had become common amongst them, where a red wind would come and destroy the people, earthquakes would be constantly afflicting them, and a portion of them would be transmuted into apes and pigs. And stones from the sky would rain on them, like what happened to the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. So these would be part of the trials and afflictions which would strike such people, wherein these various forms of disobedience had become the basic characteristics of the people. And of course, as we pointed out, when the Prophet ﷺ warns us, tells us of the future, talking about these characteristics, it's a warning to us to try to do something about it, to try to change what we can while we can. It's also, whenever the Prophet ﷺ speaks about a negative characteristic, untrustworthiness, he's also reminding us of its opposite, trustworthiness. That whilst we strive to remove these qualities of untrustworthiness, very simple qualities, we strive to do so by developing their opposite, to be trustworthy. This is a characteristic which Muslims should hold. To give zakat from our hearts as an act of worship, seeking the pleasure of Allah, etc. So we should take some of these warnings. Not only the dangers of these sinful acts, but a call to their opposite, to various acts of righteousness. And that basically summarizes the khutbah, wherein the Imam reminded us to avoid those things which have been prohibited by Allah and His Messenger, because these things are harmful to us, fundamentally. Not to avoid them ritualistically, we just don't do it because it is part of the ritual of Islam. So you find somebody will say, or I've met people like this who will say, in America they've come over, they won't eat pork, but they'll drink alcohol. You suggest him to eat pork, he's very upset, but he's got a glass of alcohol in the table. Because it's a ritual. I met people who told me, one brother from Morocco, he told me that there, he and I say a group of people, I can't say this is the case of any Moroccan, I doubt it, but there, back in Morocco, they used to break their fast with marijuana. The fast is just a ritual. The Islam, whenever it becomes ritualistic in its practice, whether in the things that we do or the things that we don't do, then we have lost sight of the purpose. We are not capable of benefiting from the spirit, from the goals of the various acts of worship and the goal of the various prohibited areas. We're not able to benefit from them because we're dealing with them in a ritualistic fashion. We should always understand that whatever has been commanded of us, it is for our benefit. Whatever has been prohibited of us, it is for our benefit. And we should always approach what we do and what we don't do in this fashion, so that it becomes a source of enlightenment for us. It raises us spiritually, brings us closer to Allah, and increases us in righteousness. If there is anything anybody would like to add, comment on, or raise questions about now, inshallah, we're going to our section of questioning. Okay, if nobody while you're thinking about something to say or whatever, I'll mention some points which have been raised to me. Which should be reflected upon. Those brothers, for example, who have come here with their wives and they have small children. Children, you know, who are so small that, you know, it's not possible to keep them quiet, you know, in the course of such a long period of time. That to leave those children, for example, amongst the women who are in a very small and confined area where they're listening to the khutbah, etc., you know, when the children start to make noise, it's very difficult because they can't take the children out onto the street, whatever, you know. The noise sometimes can become very disturbing, so much so that the people, women who are trying to listen to the presentation of the khutbah, you know, they're not able to hear it properly. So I would advise, you know, the brothers, it's better these very small children know that they should take them themselves, you know, when the time for the presentation comes or whatever, you know, after the khutbah, because up here, if then the child starts to make noise, you can step outside to avoid disturbance of everybody else, you know, much more easily than women can. Anybody have any questions or comments? Okay, let's.
Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I just could not stop by my about the question. Since last week, we were about to use it to come out. While it comes in, there used to be a meeting in the region.